Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
There, are you happy I did it the way I was supposed to?
Yeah, good job.
No ad-libbing, no switching it up, no changes. Give you the phone number of our guest. We can't call her unless we actually call her. Awesome. We have two different things for you today.
What are we calling her? Raheel?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep. We're calling her first. Oh, Bill has to do a commercial. He just sent me a smoke signal. What? Why?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Well, we have to mention our new sponsors.
I know. I forgot.
Yeah, I know you did.
That's why I was helping you.
Yeah, we have a new sponsor, Team Power. Team Power Tractors in Redding. And they're up on 3119 Twin View Boulevard. They're our local Kubota John Deere dealer. And you need a tractor, implements, anything for your ranch, small 2 to 5 acre property. We got just the products for you there at Team Power. So give us a call. The phone number there is 226-9226. And we're everything Kubota and John Deere. And we'll take care of you over there.
I heard their manager's nice.
Yeah, they got a really nice manager now.
I heard he's got a really sweet looking office with new paint on it.
Well, yeah, he's getting all important now too. So you might have to.
He doesn't have a desk, but
yeah.
If you go in there, you can go check out the paint.
Yeah, by appointment only.
But the paint's amazing.
He doesn't have a desk.
No, he doesn't have a desk yet. I think it's locked back there in Mike's area.
It's really,
standing room only.
Standing room only in my office. Yeah.
So there you go. Do you sit on a tractor or what?
Yeah, I should. There you go.
Bill just walks around.
Yeah, walks around.
That's funny. Go Team Power.
Go Team Power.
Actually, go Kubota and John Deere, actually. Yeah. So the other guys, all the red ones and everything, boom, they're gone.
There you are.
Why do I have to cut that?
Oh, no, I meant cut you.
See, Bill tries to be all subtle.
Never mind.
I don't want people to get cheated out of the hand signals. Somebody's got to tell them what you're doing over there.
I can give you hand signals.
Oh, okay.
You want all the hand
signals?
I know a lot of hand signals.
Bill's going to show me hand signals.
Yeah. There's one that's called discipline and abuse.
Oh,
that's a good one.
That one.
Oh, yeah. That one's a good one.
These days, that'll get you in trouble.
Yeah, that will.
Oh, my gosh. So we have two guests for you today. It's going to be an interesting day. We have Raheel Raza from the Clarion Project. She is an advisory board member, and we're going to chat about Jerusalem. So I think that'll be really interesting. Second hour is Stephen Strang. He's an award-winning journalist and successful businessman. All his career information's on there, and we'll do that next hour. But he wrote a book called God and Donald Trump with the foreword by Mike Huckabee. Should be really interesting. He was very involved with the election, and I think it'll be things that, needless to say, you won't hear on the mainstream media.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought they covered it all.
Yeah.
No, not really.
Yeah. We'll just leave that alone, huh? So Raheel Raza, she's a Clarion Project Advisory Board member, a founding member of the Muslim Reformer Movement, and an international human rights activist. She's going to be speaking to us about President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. So I think that's awesome and very timely. And I'm sorry we couldn't get her on like 2 weeks ago, but it worked out for this week. Raheel, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. You bring a very interesting perspective to this. I don't know. It's not really an argument, but I guess it's
to this decision, let's say. Yes.
Yeah, there you go. It's kind of an argument.
Yes.
All right. So what's your take on this?
Well, as you mentioned, people want to make it an argument, but I think that it's a very much needed, bold and decisive decision. And, you know, previous presidents of the United States have talked about it, but they've never done anything. And, you know, here we have President Donald Trump, elected leader of the first world, who goes ahead and takes this really bold step. And, you know, I think it's a step in the positive direction because it's about time that Israel was recognized, you know, as a country that is a democracy and Jerusalem as its capital. And I know that the world is having conniptions, but they just have got to get used to it, just like they've got to get used to Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly. There's a big problem there. There's quite the learning curve, apparently.
Well, it is.
Yeah, it's hard for them.
It is, but, you know, as far as Jerusalem is concerned, I mean, jokes apart, I have been there more than once. I'm a practicing observant Muslim. I have been there and I have seen that, you know, Jews, Christians, Muslims, everybody can pray at the places of worship. There is peace there, there is security, and I believe that because Jerusalem lies there, the heart of Israel, that this kind of security does exist for all of us, people of different faiths, who can go there. And, you know, I believe that these are protected sites and that Jerusalem has every right to be called the capital of Israel. And, you know, the backlash is from the countries, which is not a surprise. You know, the OIC, which is the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, 56, 57 Arab Muslim countries that hold the United Nations in the palm of their hands, are having fits. But, you know, what else is new? The conspiracy theories against Israel, the slamming of Israel has been going on for much longer. And it's not going to change or stop because Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. In fact, I think it will make people stand up and take notice.
So why is it that it's, maybe you could shed some light on why it's such a big deal for the guys that aren't Israel. How about that?
Well, the thing is that it's not a big deal. They want to make it into a big deal. You know, the idea that there should be conflict in that area is something that is a very well-intentioned move, because how else do you keep world, you know, focus on just that part of the world? How else do you get sentiments of people like the OIC? So, you know, if there is a valid reason for this not to happen, one could say, you know, they say, oh, it's going to be an impediment for peace. Well, hello, have you seen peace in the last 60 years? So, you know, what else is new there? Peace will happen when both sides can sit around a table, recognize each other, acknowledge each other, and then talk about peace. You know, it's not something that you or I are going to bring in. It is when two parties want peace, they will have peace. But the idea that the embassy should be in Jerusalem, I mean, should not have the whole world go absolutely ballistic crazy. And a lot of it is because it has come from the person of Donald Trump. Those people who might even be inclined to think that this is a good decision will not agree because of their personal emotional hostility towards the person of Donald Trump. And, you know, that is something you've seen since the day he was elected. It doesn't matter what he says, what he does, there has to be hostility towards it. And, you know, that's people thinking emotionally and not practically, not by reason and logic. And if people did step back for a moment and put their emotions aside and thought logically, this is a step that makes sense. It makes sense to me.
Well, also, it really brings the question, why wouldn't Israel have the right to pick their capital inside of their own borders? And it's that way with every other country. Why would it or should it be different for Israel?
Well, absolutely. That is a very good question. And the answer is that they have every right to do this. But as I said, you know, Israel is used as the, you know, the whipping tool for everything that is happening in the world. And this has got to stop. And I've seen it at the UN. I've seen it globally. I've seen it on social media. You know, let's blame Israel for the snowstorms that are happening here in Canada. So, you know, this is the natural default. And that thinking has to shift. That thinking has to change. And this move, so most of the decisions taken by President Trump are those which make people sit back in shock and think. And, you know, the first reaction is shock and awe. And then people start thinking, you know, why would he do that? So, yes, he has said that. And Israel, as an independent democratic country, the only democracy in the Middle East, a light in the darkness, has a right to decide that Jerusalem should be its capital. And, as I said, the rest of the world will just have to get used to it.
Now, we didn't really, I think with the mainstream media here, they didn't really cover a lot of the protesting and outrage around the world over this decision. Was there a lot? I mean, and is there now? I mean, have people kind of settled down now and realize that this is just the way it's going to be and most of that's gone away?
I think people are settling down. Yes, you're right. People are settling down because that is exactly what it should be, that this is the way it's going to be. You know, get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see that many protests, because basically the protests have no meat. They have no substance. What are they going to protest? That a country can't decide where it wants its capital?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not like they're kicking anyone else out, right?
This is what I mean. It's not as though they are usurping anyone else's right in this. You know, they have a right to call Jerusalem their capital. And I think finally when people have run out of backlash and excuses and conspiracy theories and, you know, just plain anger, they are getting used to it.
Right.
And because there are other issues that keep coming up.
Yeah, Lord knows they've got a list 100 miles long. We have to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come right back and discuss this further. I know that there's a lot more under the surface. I'd like to talk about why you think, you know, in your experience, why you think that they can't. Hey, well, what's going on? Are you missing a party? Is there a party going on there?
Yes, it's okay. Sorry, I closed the door. Sorry. I am at a party, actually. I have to drop someone to the airport, so I'll be just checking to see. I hope they haven't left yet.
Oh, okay. I was kidding, but all right, there you go. We'll be back with Raheel Raza in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to We the People. Donald Trump's theme song. Get used to it. Oh, that's funny. So, Raheel, why are the Palestinians why do they think that this would impede the peace process?
Well, as I said before, this is an issue that has been going on for over 60 years, and any new movement becomes an excuse. Now, there was a time when Israelis and Palestinians have sat around a table more than once to talk about a two-state solution and to talk about the peace process, and it's the Palestinians who have refused. So, as I said, this is something that they will have to come to terms with when they decide that this is what they want. And, you know, to do that, they must recognize the right of Israel to exist. And then they can talk about the issue.
That's true.
To do that, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. That is the first hurdle they have to get over. Well, I'm looking at several different, you know, obviously it depends on what news network you're looking at or news source you're looking at, depending on the spin. But I'm looking at one article that talks about the Turkish president warned that moving the capital is a red line for Muslims, and such an action would result in Turkey severing its diplomatic ties. Why is it a red line? Why would it be a red line for Muslims?
It isn't a red line, or it shouldn't be a red line for Muslims, because if Muslims follow the Quran and say that they are Muslim, they will understand that the Quran tells them that this land belongs to the Jews. And so it is being made into a red line, and it shouldn't be. This is political. This is purely political. You know, this is holding 1.6 billion Muslims hostage. There's a lot of ignorance involved. And it is a politicization of an issue that shouldn't be that way.
Oh, no kidding. So it's not. So in the Quran, it says that Jerusalem is.
Yes, it does.
Well, that's inconvenient.
It is. But no one wants to acknowledge that.
No kidding. So,
yes.
I mean, I'm not asking you to quote it or anything. Not that I would know the difference. But how does it actually say that? Is it just part
well,
of.
Well, I don't have the verse.
Yeah, sorry
right
about
in
that.
In front of me, but it does. I mean, there's an entire chapter about. I mean, the Quran is the story of the Jews, and then there is a verse that speaks about.
We're losing you
to the people of Israel. Yes, You know, and the point is that it has been kept alive as a political issue. It has been kept alive as a controversial issue. And as I said, it's only when people want peace that they have peace talks. When they don't want peace, then they talk about hostility and differences.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I'm looking at this other one. It would overturn 70 years of international consensus. Love that word. And many would argue effectively signal the end of moves to achieve peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I mean, honestly, this could solve cancer. I'm thinking it's that big.
Well, no, that issue has been there. It has been alive. It's been kept alive. And this is not going to make it any worse or, you know, probably to make it better, because the rest of the world will begin to realize that this is a country that has a right to exist. And then, you know, you can talk about the problems. This is not to say that, you know, there are no problems involved. Of course, every country has problems. But you talk about them civilly when you recognize the right of that country as an existence.
Yeah, interesting. And they, you know, all the other stuff, you know, that I'm looking at here, it all has these roots of, well, he's trying to win over Jewish voters, so that's why he's doing it. Why do you think he did it? Besides the fact that we agreed to this as a country, 20 years ago or something?
Well, he agreed to do it because this was something that needed to be done. As I said, other presidents have talked about it, but they never made the decision. But here is a man who just doesn't say things. He does them. And it shocks the world because they're not used to it. You know, they're used to humming and hawing over decisions. They're used to going round and round in circles. And this is something that he just went ahead and did. And, of course, you know, the backlash, the accusations, they're all going to be there. Because, as I said, from day one, no matter what he did, he had to be put down. He had to be negated. There had to be a subversive motive. And, of course, they're going to find all of that. But the fact is that this is long overdue. And it was time it had to be done. And he did it. Good for him. Now let's move on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because, you know, the United States decided years ago to move our embassy. It's just we never had a president with the guts enough to do it. And so here comes Trump. And like you just said, if he said he's going to do something, he does it. And that really throws people off because there's no politics involved. He makes a statement and he sticks to it. And then when he does stick to it, you're right. He's got to be demonized for making this decision on his own, which is just crazy.
For everything he does.
So why do you think he did it now? Do you think there was a time frame, or do you think there's another a message there, or why do you think he did it now?
Well, among a lot of other things he's done, which are out of the ordinary, out of the box, his visit to the Middle East, the speaking to Muslim leaders. This is just in a long line of decisions that he's made as he went along. He said he would do it, and he did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's any other underlying motive there, as far as I can see. But, you know, it doesn't matter when he did it. It would have had the same reaction.
Well, one thing I've noticed that he is a master at is he really kind of guides the media, the mainstream media. He really kind of guides the conversation there. When he doesn't want them to talk about Russia anymore, he throws something out there like red meat, and they jump on it like a pack of dogs.
Like crap hole.
It doesn't matter what it is. He can steer the media, and I think this was just one more thing that he got the media to jump on. And it's almost like he has this bag of distractions that he just looks into and goes, I'm going to have him talk about
that
this.
One.
And while they're doing that,
people give him credit.
Oh, absolutely, he is, and he doesn't do this without. I don't believe he does anything without a good reason. And there's always something else he's working on, while they're frothing at the mouth at his last decision.
I know. I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. And
it is kind of fun.
And that's where they are right now. He's thrown another controversy out there, and they're all fixated on that. And my question is, now what's he working on? Because he could care less what the media says, because he told him to say it. So it's very interesting. And I think this Jerusalem move was just one more thing that needed to be done. It was the right thing to do. He knew it was the right thing to do, and by doing that, it gets the media off his back so he can complete other tasks.
Well, it certainly outed
them. Yeah, until he goes on to the next thing that's going to shove them out of their wits, and then they're going to be scrambling again.
Well, he it also really divided. Well, I'm not going to say divided, but how about this? Sorted the people at the UN. I mean, I think Nikki Haley's comment, you know, we're going to keep track.
Yeah, we're taking names.
Yeah, we're taking names.
and they did.
Yes. I mean, the UN needed sorting out. I've been going there for the past 5 years, twice a year, and it's a shame to see that there are, you know, the OIC comes there with the explicit purpose of slamming Israel at every step. It doesn't matter what you talk about. That's the reason it's there.
How do you think, I think we're losing you here. As far as the UN goes, do you think they're actually starting to pay attention a little bit to what America is saying and doing? And do you think the resistance is lessening any?
Uh-oh, we lost her. Uh-oh. Raheel?
Raheel, are you there?
I think she's too far from... too far from her signal.
Yep.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
That would be a click.
Definitely too far from her signal. Hey, look, it's time for a break.
Yellow bird.
Hey, Bob, I'd like to take this break at the correct time. That would be now. Usually he's over there.
Did you pull a plug on
it? I didn't. I haven't touched anything. I just only have this pen right here, this pen. I have a phone, but I'm not touching the phone, just the pen. We haven't had pen and a phone jokes for a while. Thank goodness. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. About it too. That's been Israel for many, many years.
Don Henley double play there. We don't do that often, but the Eagles get over it, and Don Henley's dirty laundry both seem perfect somehow.
Somehow, you know, those could be a frequent songs. Raheel, what else are people not being told about all of this from your vantage point?
Well, first of all, I think that it's very hard for people to understand what Israel is all about unless they actually go and visit. And I say this from personal experience because I, too, grew up with the same kind of attitudes were taught and, you know, the anti-Semitism that has engulfed our communities. And then 10 years ago, my husband and I went for a visit there, and our eyes were totally opened. And I think that is a very important feature in this. People follow each other like sheep, you know, and you ask them, do you even know where Israel is on the map? Have you ever met a Jew? Have you ever met an Israeli? Have you ever met a Palestinian? And they haven't. And they are making statements, or they have, you know, strong political emotions because of what they have heard. And I think in this era of fake news, social media, propaganda, conspiracy theories, it's extremely important to form our opinions individually, independently, through reason and logic rather through emotions, and then talk about the issues. And as I said before, this is not to say that there aren't concerns and there aren't issues. I mean, I'm a human rights activist. I want human rights for everyone, Israelis and Palestinians, Arabs and Jews and Muslims and Christians. But as I say, you have to sit down around a table as equals and talk about these issues. You know, it can't be the whole world against this little country in the middle of nowhere and then expect that there's going to be change.
Yeah, that's true. And they aren't. I mean, it is kind of interesting when you look at the amount, just when you look at the geography, the size of the people against them and the size of Israel, you'd think that they would have been gone a long time ago.
Well, there are people who wish that they were gone a long time ago. And, you know, in Canada, the amount of anti-Semitism you see in universities, the BDS movement, you know, Israel Apartheid Week. So I went up to one of these organizations and I said, where is the Saudi Apartheid Week? Where is the Iranian Apartheid Week? Because that's where there really is gender apartheid. So, you know, they don't have an answer to that question. So when you bring up the conversation, and this is among people that I know, my friends, my relatives, when you sit down and actually ask them, let's talk about these issues, they really don't have any ground to stand on, because it's all about what someone else said. It's all about hearsay. It's all about propaganda. And, you know, the propaganda machine against Israel has been churning out on the backs of billions of petrodollars from the oil-rich kingdoms. It has been going on for such a long time that now it's become a given. So people are not willing to hear anything good about Israel and not even willing to have the discussion. That's not the democratic way to deal with things.
Well, why was going there so, why was that such a game changer for you? Why was actually going to Israel such a big deal?
Well, because first of all, when people heard that we were going, two Pakistani-born Muslims, my husband and I, so they all started, these are non-Israelis, non-Jews, started warning us to
warning us that you'd be cut off.
Yep, that was the end of that.
That was the end of that.
We don't like what you have
apparently
to say.
The warnings were all true.
Yeah.
Well, we can't quite take a break yet. Can we call her back again?
We can do that.
She's driving to the Toronto airport.
Yeah, I find it very interesting, though, that when they do talk about Israeli issues, it's mostly emotion and bad information and old information that's been out there forever, like she said, and it's like the talking points. But current, updated facts, nobody seems to have those in their hands when they want to argue the point that, you know, Israel doesn't have the right to exist, say.
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting that in the Quran it says that Jerusalem belongs to Israel. I thought, well, that's fairly obvious there.
Yeah. Well, we got to leave that part out, though. That totally interferes with the...
How dare we talk about that?
Yeah, that's not good.
Okay, we'll take it.
we're going to reconnect her again.
She's got about 5 to 7 minutes more.
Oh, okay. Of drive or no signal?
Till she has to do whatever she's doing at the airport, I assume.
Probably airportness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
the Canadian equivalent of the TSA.
Oh, that.
Yes, I'm actually driving some friends to the airport who had come in from New York. I'm going to drop them off. So can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, so we were talking, you had asked me what was the game changer, right?
Yeah.
And I told you how people were warning us that, you know, it was going to be a terrible experience. And then we get there and we find that it is exactly the opposite of what anyone told us. I mean, truly, we were afraid. We thought, you know, I don't know what we thought. We thought it was going to be a terrifying experience. We were out of the airport and immigration in about 10 minutes. And yes, people did question us, and there was security, but it was all extremely polite. And after that, we traveled across Israel freely. And it was an entirely different experience. We stopped and talked to people. We went and prayed at Al-Aqsa Mosque, and I felt extremely safe. So the whole idea of being there and speaking to Israeli Arabs who said that they would rather stay there than anywhere else, it was an eye-opener. We went to Haifa, where we saw that there were equal numbers of Arab and Jewish students studying. So, you know, spoke to people in the Knesset, you know, did our own research, talked to people from every side, and realized that, you know, the propaganda machine has been in full swing, and everything we saw was totally different from what we had been told.
Interesting, because I've always heard it's really tolerant of different faiths.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Because, boy, you listen to our mainstream media, and, boy, it's the last place on earth you want to try to travel.
You know, Raheel, before you have to go, you're the author of Their Jihad, Not My Jihad, I have that linked on our site. Why don't you give people a pitch for that? Because it's an interesting read.
Thank you. Well, you know, after 9/11... it was very frustrating for those of us who call ourselves reform-minded Muslims, because we had been warning that there was a problem, you know, in the Muslim world. There was a rise of radicalization. So after the bombings in July in England, in London, England, I wrote this book called Their Jihad, Not My Jihad, because I wanted to explain to the masses the difference between progressive liberal Muslims, between political Islam and Islam as my faith. And I also wanted to make this a warning for Muslims reading it, that, you know, the problem is not over, that unless we wake up and do something, we are heading into very muddy waters. And so this is a collection of articles and essays that I had written that were put together under the title of Their Jihad, Not My Jihad, and I'm actually working on the sequel to it, which is going to be titled It's a Global Jihad, Stupid.
In the kindest possible way.
Yes, in the kindest possible way, yes. So, essentially, that's what it is.
Nice. Well, how's the movement itself going? You know, this resistance to the you know, one size fits all. We have to hate everybody, and we're the only ones that are right. And you've been very outspoken and pushing for human rights. Do you feel like it's going well?
Well, I think it is, but I'm an eternal optimist. And, you know, I always see the brighter sides. I always see the glass half full. You know, I believe in dialogue. I believe in peace, and I want to see peace. So perhaps, you know, I'm too optimistic, but I do think that there's a change in the reform movement. We see a huge change because young people are totally fed up of the status quo. Who wants to wake up every morning and figure out where the next terrorist attack has taken place?
Yeah.
And I'm a grandmother. I do this for the future of the next generations of young people who, although they may be Canadian or American, but have the Muslim faith in common with many others. And for their future, it's important that we speak out. We cannot continue to be silent in the face of all the atrocities that are taking place. And we have to, you know, if we want justice for ourselves, we must want justice for others as well. So it is in the interest of truth and justice that I continue to speak out, despite the backlash that I face as a Muslim woman. But, you know, these are voices that are very important in the interest of world peace. So that is where I'm at right now.
When you travel to the Middle East, are you recognized over there as an activist for the Muslim?
So, you know, it's I am in some places. In others, they would rather act as though I don't exist, because you have to understand that I am a thorn in the side of the Islamists.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
I am a thorn in the side of the extremists. And it is worse because I'm a woman.
Sure.
So they would rather ignore the fact that I exist. But when I get backlash, when I get hate mail, when I get death threats, when I get fatwas, I know that I am reaching out to someone. Someone is being bothered by what I'm saying, and that's good.
Well, that's an odd way to measure it, but I could. That makes perfect sense.
With all the unrest that's going on right now over in Iran, do you have a take on the success of those folks actually getting anywhere as far as resisting the mullahs over there?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, the regime has been known to use cruelty against the people who are speaking out. And, you know, that's a given history. But the fact is that I think the movement has started. You know, they have the young people, the people on the street have expressed what they feel. And that can never be put back in the box.
Right.
Now, they should have had more support from Western media, from Western regimes, from Western feminist movements. Those women who march against Trump in the millions should have marched in support of Iranian women who were putting their lives on the line for freedom and democracy and individual rights. But there are double standards.
Right.
You know, these same feminists don't speak out for women in parts
right.
of the world where, you know, they're being treated so cruelly. So we have to support them. Regardless of whether the movement dies down or not, we must continue to support them on social media, through articles, through, you know, in any way that we can.
Right, right. Yeah, I think they're a little tied up right now making new hats for their next march. But
designing the new hats?
Yeah. Now, what was interesting, I thought, with the Iranian uprising was that, from what I heard, a lot of those protests were actually taking place in towns that were the most religious and the mullahs had the biggest hold over. Is that correct?
Yes, a lot of it was coming from there. But this is what happens, you see, when you keep on oppressing the people for so long, there comes a point when they erupt. And you see this happening. And this is why there is hope. When the movement, the change, the reform comes from the people themselves, that is when it holds the most power. People standing on the outside can only support, but they do need the support and they have not received the support that they need.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly it is a positive sign and we can only hope that they will continue to protest and they will continue to lobby against oppression and injustice.
Do you feel that American support would be welcome with this movement?
Oh, yes. All support would be welcome. And, you know, even though the general image out there is that they hate Americans, they don't. The young people on the ground still look up to America, and America still is the first world. So whatever America does or says resonates in the rest of the world. So, yes, American support would be very important.
Mm-hmm. And in your movement, I'm curious, because, you know, we always have that expression, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. So it always seems that we spend a lot of time to educate the young. But who's your audience? Who's really getting what you're encouraging them to understand? More young or more old?
Yes, a large part of this is women, because we believe that when you educate one woman, you educate the whole world. So, you know, we are trying to work on the women's movement, you know, the human rights movement, but supporting women in countries where they don't have a voice, because that is where the change is going to come from. And I'm not saying this as a feminist. I'm saying this actually as a grandmother and a mother, that I believe it is from the women that the main change is going to come from. The men have been moved too much to the extreme, and I think women are the nurturers and the peacemakers, and that's where they will change. And also, the youth is our target. We don't know whether we've been able to reach out to all of them, but definitely the next generation of young people who are going to be the citizens of the world.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And yeah, because if the moms, I've always wondered about that, you know, what mom in her right mind raises kids and then tells them to go strap on a bomb vest?
Exactly. Well, it's a mother's choice, either to raise a child to be a democratic, caring citizen of the country that they live in, or to be a suicide bomber. So we wish to educate those women who are going to be mothers and take care of the next generation. I
Great.
Have to
Yes, you gotta
say
have
goodbye now.
Yeah, I was going to say your 7 minutes is up.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for the information, and keep in touch with us. We like having you.
Okay. Thank you.
Safe travels.
Okay.
All right. We have to take a really quick break, and then we will come back. You are listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Good lead into this. You started the fire. That's where I was headed.
Yeah.
How did you know that?
Yeah.
Bill loves to start a good fire.
No, nothing wrong with that.
Bob, how's your pyromaniac index? Mine's low. I guess I've never really been a fire starter. Bill was a fire starter as a young boy. Not good.
Yeah, I had a lot of experience with that.
Did you want to grow up to be a fireman?
No, I just was into research.
Don't tell the insurance company.
He was into R&D.
Yeah, I was just in the R&D department. Yeah, I had a pretty good grasp on how all that worked. By the time my
you didn't really
education
want to put
was
out,
over.
Putting
no.
them out, really.
Because,
you know, they say a lot of pyromaniacs want to be firemen. Sorry,
yeah.
Firemen.
Yeah.
No.
No, putting them out wasn't my bag.
It's probably good your dad was a policeman.
Yeah.
That makes good sense. So I hope that was interesting for folks with Raheel. She has a unique vantage point, actually, I think, on a lot of this stuff. But, you know, I think everybody...
Well, the other Muslim perspective is what's interesting.
This is like the common sense people that we could actually deal with instead of the crazy off-the-hook
people. The mainstream
people.
Media tends to ignore it.
Yeah, right. You never hear about these guys. What's the other thing? Anyway, it's bad when you lose your train of thought. And,
yeah. Well, she has the perspective that we don't hear about, and she has ties and a lot of knowledge about what's going on over there that you're not going to hear on the mainstream.
No, they don't want you to hear it.
They don't want you to hear it.
And I still think Nikki Haley's deal was the funniest.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're taking.
They're going to take names.
Yeah.
People were all mad about that. It's like, really, what's wrong with that?
Well, I think the UN is definitely on notice now. I think they see that our president isn't messing around, and if you want to talk smack, then
we've been sissies for 8 years. They thought we were still going to be sissies, I guess. Wow,
yeah,
bad planning on their part.
Your bank account's going to probably be a little less this month.
Because your check is not in the mail.
Uncle Sam forgot
to mail
it to
you. It's now one of the universal promises. Checks in the mail.
Yeah.
Hey, so I thought we could introduce our guest for the next hour, even though it's not the next hour yet, but we do have like 2 minutes. And that way we get 2 minutes more of him.
Yeah.
Provided he's not driving to the Toronto airport, visiting Mount
or
Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore.
What else are people doing? You know, it's like, we told you were going to be on from noon to one. What are you doing at the airport?
What are you doing in your car?
Why are you in your car? Funny. Anyway, well, I guess if you're going to have variety and you're
going to... her car only dropped twice.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's better than Claire, who disappeared. She's in Mount Rushmore. Bye. Bye, Claire. So Stephen Strang, he's an award-winning journalist, a successful businessman who began his career as a newspaper reporter in the Orlando Sentinel, easy for me to say, before founding a Christian publishing house and media company while interviewing and writing about nearly every Christian leader in the country over the last 4 decades. So it's not like he just popped up when Donald Trump got elected. He's the author of a book called God and Donald Trump that we have sitting here in hardback. It's a very lovely book, actually. And just as books go. And some of the notes on the back, Michelle Bachmann, Alveda King, the forewords by Mike Huckabee. So, and it's not a, you know, this isn't a backbreaking book. How long is it? That's what everybody does. You know, it's like your teacher tells you have to read a book, and the first thing you do is flip to the end, find out how long it is. It's about 180 pages or so. So It's a doable book. It's not in tiny print either. So I would encourage you. I'll put a link to it on the site. I haven't done that yet. He joined other Christian leaders who campaigned for Trump's election. Strang is the CEO of Charisma Media and the founder of Charisma Magazine. So I think you're going to like this guy.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Super interesting, and it's a cool book.
Yeah, it tracks it from the election to present day and why it's so impactful.
So hang with us. You'll hear the other side of what's going on with Donald Trump. Hey, the part you never hear about in the mainstream media. What a surprise.
So fuffy.
Always here on We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hour 2 of We the People is next at KCNR. Shasta Redding.